Welcome to Hungry Authors, the show for aspiring authors who will stop at nothing to accomplish their writing and publishing dreams.
We're your hosts, Liz and Ariel, and we're honored that you're here. Let's dive in. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Hungry Authors podcast. Today, we're super psyched to have our friend Mara here. She is a teacher and amazing editor, but she's also a personal friend of ours. We've gotten to go to conferences together and hang out together in person, so we're thrilled to have her here, and we're going to let Mara introduce herself to you guys. So Mara, welcome, and tell our audience a little bit about you and what you do.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I'm Mara. I am a teacher of over 16 years, teacher of writing at the high school and college level, and then also been freelance editing for probably about 12 years. And I'm passionate about harnessing the power of words to transform pain into purpose and change the world, which I do believe can be done through just about any topic and any genre. I offer editing, coaching, and online classes. Might tell you a little more about some of those classes later, but I just love helping authors or writers, whether or not you consider yourself an author, just explore what matters most and figure out how to say what they really want to say in the clearest, most compelling way.
Yeah. And Mara, you have been like one of our go-to people for edits. And, you know, I love sending authors your way because you are probably one of the most talented people that I've worked with at bringing clarity to prose. And that's what we want to talk to you about today. So can you tell us a little bit about what does clarity mean? Because I think that's one of those things we talk about all the time as, you know, writers and coaches ourselves. We tell people, you know, you have to have clear ideas and clear writing, but what does that really mean?
So it's really very simple at its core. I think clarity just means the quality of being easy to understand. I think clarity is the most important quality for effective writing, kind of hands down, because writing is at its core communication. So the purpose of writing is to communicate something. And if your writing is unclear, then your message won't come across accurately or at all, because maybe the reader gets confused and gives up, which just defeats the entire purpose. So if you don't have that clarity, then none of the other stuff matters. Plus, when you prioritize clarity, then it always helps with all the other things as well.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. I love that. So then tell us, like, it does happen, but in general, I don't hear a lot of people saying that they don't think their writing is clear. I think a lot of people actually do think it's clear, but it's actually not that clear. Maybe it's clear to them because we all kind of think we make sense, right? But to somebody else, it's not as clear. So how do you help people understand if their writing is clear or not, or, you know, lead them to the realization that it needs a lot more work in the clarity department? How do you navigate that with your clients?
Well, I mean, if they're at the point of hiring me, then they already trust me most of the time to say, you know, I always try to ask questions and say, like, what are you really trying to say here? Or is this what you're trying to say? But when I'm teaching, you know, I'm teaching students, whether it's adults or high school students, you know, part of the skill that we have to learn is putting ourselves in the position of the reader, you know, in their shoes, like in their eyeballs, right? So like, how might this be misunderstood? What are the possible ways? And I think that comes more naturally, maybe to some people than others. But if we look for the possibility of misunderstanding, then we'll be more likely to see it. And also just asking other people to read it and say, what do you think this is about? Yeah. You know, in my classes, I have some specific like red flags that I'll mention of like if you can notice this type of thing going on, then those are signs of, wordiness or vagueness or all those things that go together with weak writing. But in a general sense, I think it's just that putting yourself in their shoes and then whenever possible, getting someone else's actual perspective.
Yeah. No, and I love that you're so like kind of zeroed in on that. It's about how the reader is interpreting our writing, which is so hard for writers to do. I mean, and that's why we say no matter how good of a writer you are, ideally you will have an editor involved in the process at some point if you plan on putting your work out into the world, because none of us can see our writing with, totally unbiased eyes. We're all reading our intent into the writing itself. And I don't know if you see this, but I feel like that's probably the number one mistake or, issue that I see in a lot of the writing that I edit is just authors kind of making assumptions that the reader's already following along with what I'm saying. The reader already agrees with me. The reader already knows what I'm trying to get across. And so there's a lot of almost like shortcuts that get taken in the writing. And as the person who's trying to represent the reader, my job is almost to slow the writer down and go, well, hold on, say more here, explain this. You haven't made your argument clear yet. We really need more explicit explanations of what you're trying to say. Do you see that come up a lot for your clients too?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think so you're kind of hinting at, so I see clarity as in writing as operating at two levels, primarily the macro big picture level of ideas, and then also the more micro level of sentence structure and word choice and phrasing. And so it has to start at the level of ideas. And that includes being really clear on what your big idea is, like the main takeaway that you want your reader to understand. And then also what the smaller points are along the way and how that argument logically flows. And, in like self-help or prescriptive nonfiction books, we might not always be thinking of it as an argument. That is, of course, a word I use a lot in my writing classes of like academic, college composition. Like we talk about your thesis statement and your argument, but the same principles still apply in these other types of writing that you are trying to inform, persuade, convince, sorry to say explain. Like there's, you've got a point A and a point B, which I know you guys talk about, and like your transformation. And I talk about it as a journey a lot, and those steps along the way are really important pieces. And if your reader gets lost at any given point, then they're not going to be able to continue on that journey with you. So there's no like simple fix to just snap your fingers and like instantly be able to recognize those things. But taking the time to really think about like what are the smallest possible steps on this journey and how could someone get lost? Like I think I've learned a lot about writing in this sense by being a teacher because I've had that gift of being in the classroom and explaining something and then somebody saying, "Well, whoa, 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 whoa. How did you get there? Like I don't know what that is." And so I always try to think when I'm planning a lesson, or the same thing when I'm planning an argument is like, where might someone get lost? Where might they not understand a term I'm using? Or where might they misinterpret or just, what any possible way that they might become confused? I want to try to hedge against that. And I won't catch everything, but it helps a lot.
Yeah, I know. I sometimes almost think of writing like you're writing an algorithm for like a computer. I don't know if you've done any coding or anything, but it's like incredibly detailed. Like you cannot miss a single step or the entire thing falls apart. Which that analogy might not land for some people who have never done coding. Maybe another analogy is like a puzzle. Like you have to have this piece that connects to this piece that connects to the next piece that connects to the next piece, and you cannot skip any pieces. you can't skip from like one piece over here way over, three pieces down the road. Like you've got to lead the reader step by step by step, like you said. And it's almost mathematical. That's why I think of coding, because it's almost like this order of operations, and you cannot skip any steps. And if you do, you're going to lose your reader. And a lot of authors, because their brains already know this, they end up skipping a lot of steps.
Can we talk about clarity in memoir for a minute, though, or like narrative nonfiction? Because something that I struggle with personally when writing memoir and ghosting memoir for my for clients is actually in an effort to be understood, sometimes the writing actually becomes unclear. Like I have a client who I'll write the work and then he gets to edit. And his edits almost always are reinserting lots of things that I can tell he's putting in there because he wants to be understood. And as like humans, when we're telling our own stories, like stories are messy, especially the internal parts of our story. So a lot of it is like he was feeling great, then he's feeling bad, then he's feeling great, then he's feeling bad, and then you know what I mean? And so, like, and I know this, I've heard him tell all this, and I've intentionally made choices to sort of smooth some of this out in the effort of clarity. But memoir writers, for better or worse, and I totally admit to this too, as someone whose own writing is quite personal, really want to be understood. So you want to sort of over-explain sometimes, which you'd think would lead to more clarity, but often in memoir, it muddies it. You know what I mean? So, like, how do you think about clear writing at that micro level and that macro level when it comes to storytelling, like in memoir and narrative, nonfiction?
It's a great question. Well, I guess one of the first things coming to mind is related to a similar question about wordiness or concision, which I do think often goes hand in hand with clarity, but sometimes more words do help it make, help it make more sense, do add to clarity, and sometimes not. And knowing the difference is definitely the art, but I think in fiction or memoir, which are similar as far as the writing like technique, concision comes down to knowing when to zoom in and when to zoom out, when to summarize and when to go into detail. So I think that's definitely part of it. And like the example you gave of I was feeling good and then I felt worse and then I felt better and then, sometimes we need to know the intricacies of that emotional roller coaster because it serves our larger purpose. And then, of course, that always is always this stuff comes back to what is your main purpose, either in the book as a whole or in this chapter, this section. And whatever we do should be supporting that purpose. So sometimes those intricacies do prove a point. Like maybe that's essential to the message you're trying to communicate about, I don't know, emotions being fickle or something. But then other times, it's like the reader doesn't really need that. Like we all like, or maybe you can summarize it in one sentence. Like it was a roller coaster, and that's all you need. So knowing when, when can we summarize concisely, and that's actually clearer because it can be distracting to spend too many words, too much time on something that isn't ultimately really important to our message.
Yeah, and I think you're right, and you were kind of touching on this earlier that a lot of clarity is provided by the structure that we set for ourselves at the very beginning and making sure that we know that message, that that argument, that big idea that we have. And a lot of the time, if we can fix that at the beginning and then make sure we have a structure that reinforces that message and helps us tell that message, then all of the downstream stuff that we're kind of talking about becomes a lot easier, and it becomes easier to say, okay, clearly this does not fit. Clearly this is too much, or this is not helping my argument. But yeah, you have to have that higher level of clarity first. So how do you help authors find that bigger level of clarity around Just what are they trying to say? Like, what are we here to accomplish today?
I was thinking memoir is always extra messy. Like I tell my students, the more personal it is, the material we're writing about, the more personal it is, the more difficult it's going to be, and probably the more time it will take because you're so in it and there's literally an unlimited quantity of material that you could include. And so sometimes you just have to write stuff and you put in all the details and then you realize, oh no, they're not actually helping, so it's not like a 1, 2, 3 and then there you are kind of process. But I guess I always say, like, you need to have a pre-writing strategy. And I try to emphasize that for my students by actually referencing something I heard from a Philip Yancey interview, who's written lots of more prescriptive theological nonfiction and also wrote a really great memoir fairly recently. And he was saying that his writing process, that he also teaches, I think, and recommends, means that you would have basically, so think you have a week. He gave this example. Let's say you have a week to write an article. You should spend, he would plan to spend 2 days pre-writing, preparing, researching, thinking about his ideas, clarifying what he wants to say and how it should be organized and what the supporting points would be. One day actually just writing, like getting it all on the page, and then 2 days revising and editing. So, two-fifths to like a half, like at least a third of your time should be spent doing stuff in your mind and possibly also on paper, like figuring out what you want to say before you're even really technically writing.
Would you say you need a book, Matt?
It's so interesting that you ask that because absolutely. So, there are many tools, brainstorming and outlining, and depending on the length of what you're working on, I also like to say some people do need to just do a brain dump, vomit draft, whatever kind of lovely metaphor you want to use for it, to just get stuff out. Some people, I've learned this through with my students, like sometimes you just can't do an outline and then write something. You've got to write something and then outline what you wrote and then write again. So find your own process, but somewhere in there, it really is essential to do something to clarify your ideas and organize your ideas. And the organizing is a way of clarifying, such as book mapping. And I am not being paid to say this, have attended an early version of the Hungry Author's book mapping, both for prescriptive nonfiction and memoir. And the content is really, really good, very clear. Highly recommend it. And I just know for a project as big as a book, it like the longer it is, the more important it is to really invest in this process. And the clearer your plan can be, the easier time you're going to have and the better product you're going to produce because you will get super, super clear again on what your main idea is, what this, like I talk about as supporting points, but the steps in the journey, and then how those should be organized. And that all also relates to, as you guys like to say, the transformation tale. What is the reader supposed to get out of this? How are they supposed to change? And or how the main character, if it's fiction or memoir, how does the author change? Like, what is
Yeah.
going on here that if you can put it into one sentence, then you know that you're clear on it. And that is absolutely the first step.
Hey friends, it's that time again. If you've been wanting to learn about our bespoke book mapping process that has helped hundreds of authors plan and write the book of their dreams, we have good news. Registration is now open for our next Map Your Book cohort, which runs May 7th through June 4th. In 5 90-minute sessions and weekly Q&A meetings, we'll help you figure out your book's transformation and teach you how to map out your entire book, chapter by chapter. Book mapping is the invisible matrix that makes books work. We're going to teach you how to see it and how to do it for your own book. Head to mapyourbook.com to learn more and sign up for our May cohort. Well, thank you for those very kind words. So I imagine, especially because you teach the Unearthing Beauty class, which is all about helping people bring their personal stories and really refine a piece of writing that's, around something. I know you've shared with me that a lot of those pieces of writing are about, deep griefs or losses in their lives, and they're always very meaningful. And I imagine that through this process of helping them find clarity around what they're trying to say and what their transformation is, I'm sure that it helps them, rewrite the narrative of what happened in some ways. So can you talk more about just how you see this process of finding clarity, not just working for the reader, because obviously that's essential, but also helping the writer kind of put this, into terms that are helpful for them too.
I think it's maybe more obvious with personal writing, like you're talking about. But I think it's also true in various ways for more prescriptive writing. So, like in my class, we talk about, one of the things we talk about is the way that naming our experiences helps us see them more clearly. And so, I mean, I don't know if that's sort of coming at the question a little bit backwards, but like by giving words to something, we then see it more clearly in our own minds. And then it's kind of like a cycle that when we can give it words, then we see it more clearly, and then we can give it more accurate words. And then, of course, when we're writing, when those experiences are things, are formative experiences, things that have shaped who we are and how we think about ourselves and how we think about the world, then anytime we adjust our narrative, like the story that we're believing, that we're telling ourselves, then that can change everything, which is why I love this Unearthing Beauty class so much, because they start to realize how much meaning and purpose and beauty has come out of even really difficult things, and position themselves as like the heroines and her you know it's always been women so far, but heroines of their own journey, and claiming ownership and seeing how the way that we talk or write about things can really change our realities. But I feel like that's a little bit tangential to some of this conversation.
Yeah, no, I love that. One of my I was lucky to work with Ray Edwards a long time ago. He's a successful copy editor, and he has this exercise that he would always have people do in his like copywriting courses or something, and he'd be like, write, like, think about something that happened to you and like something hard that happened to you, and like write it out as like a tragedy. And then he'd be like, okay, now write it out as a comedy. And it was just really interesting how like you actually could do both, and it was in the writing of it two ways that people, obviously they're learning about copy editing and the power of words, but what it really does is teach you about like the power of writing those words over the way that we see ourselves and the events that happen to us, like it's kind
That's
of
really
amazing.
cool.
Yeah. Okay. What are some of your favorite writing books that might help people with some of these things? You don't have to say hungry authors. We beat that drum plenty over here. But say, and then it's not out yet anyway, so nobody's read it yet. But
I'll
those
say
are
it. Well, I would say it because I get
okay.
to read,
Coming
one
on
of
August 6th, go pre-order. Okay, go.
your. I did get to read the I can't remember what would you call that, like a beta copy or
Yeah.
something, and
Yeah, an early version.
yes,
Yeah.
so I would definitely add that to my list for anyone doing prescriptive nonfiction, I guess, and also memoir. But so much, there's so many writing books out there, and half of it is just like, who can make this fun to read? And I think you guys definitely win at that. And also being practical, like that's one of my qualities that I look for is there's a lot of writing books I feel like that talk about ideas of like, ooh, this makes writing great. But then you're like, okay, yeah. And how do I do that? And then there's nothing. So I really like that your book and some others, then also give those practical tips for application. So the one I honestly use the most is called The Nuts and Bolts of College Writing by Michael Harvey. It's a very thin little volume. He's very concise. He seems to take his own points to heart. And yes, it is focused on college writing, so more academic or formal, like essay writing. So not everything would apply if you're writing certainly memoir or prescriptive nonfiction, but has got a lot of really practical tips, and a lot of the concepts do apply to any type of prose nonfiction, even probably some of them a little bit to fiction, of just like strong, clear, concise, all of those things. I also like Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott, just for kind of encouragement and humor. And Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, which is not specifically writing, but just for like creative inspiration. I really enjoyed that one. And Marion Roach Smith is, I call her the memoir guru for all things memoir. Now, she has a pretty particular approach, but I think it's a good balance. She's like very no nonsense. I think it's a good balance for how most of us tend to approach telling our own stories, which is like, everything is so beautiful, or just like she's very no nonsense and like cuts right through all of the sort of self-indulgent stuff that we might get into. But I do have more thoughts on how clarity can help us not only as writers, but also as people.
Okay, well, say more.
So we talked a little bit about like how personal writing can do that, but I think that like prioritizing clarity on in any kind of like nonfiction writing helps us because we're forced to figure out what we really want to say, which requires us to identify what really matters to us. It helps us to organize our thoughts, and all of that helps us to be better communicators in general. So even if, like with my students, most of my students are not like in high school students or college students, they're not planning to be writers, but they're all going to be communicators. So it helps you form mental habits of clear thinking because, of course, you cannot write clearly unless you are first thinking clearly. And another part of that that we've sort of hinted about or touched on was that it requires you to examine your assumptions and see things from other people's point of view, which can help us be kinder and more compassionate. It's just a great skill. And then there's also this idea that clear writing doesn't allow us to hide. And several writers I know think about sort of the opposite of clarity is deception, whether it's intentional or not. Usually it's not. Sometimes it can be. So, but it's easy to use fancy words or convoluted phrasing to make ourselves sound good. But when we strip all of that away, we're forced to confront our ideas and therefore ourselves in their like just naked, unadorned form. We see them as they really are, and then we're forced or invited to, decide what to do with them. Are we going to improve them? Are we going to share them? Brené Brown says that clear is kind. And I think that there's a real courage that it takes sometimes to be clear because of that aspect that we can't hide behind flowery language anymore. People are going to see our actual ideas, and maybe they won't like them, or maybe they won't think they're very interesting. And that can be really scary. But also, like, that's what we're here for. That's what we're doing. And it doesn't mean that you can't use beautiful language, but we don't want to be hiding behind it. So, one last point on this that's actually from that Michael Harvey book. He has this whole chapter about the pompous style, which is the enemy in his book. He has his like brand antagonist, like the idea that he's pushing against is this inflated, like showy, but ultimately distracting or confusing or misleading language. And he cites George Orwell a lot, author of 1984, who wrote a lot about how politicians in particular try to hide behind equivocal language, like, ambiguous language that could mean more than one thing, so that whatever, how, if somebody doesn't like what they said, they can be like, oh, well, you just misinterpreted it. I actually meant it this way. And so they're avoiding responsibility. And he said that clarity and communication is a moral imperative.
Yeah, I love that point.
Me
I
too.
see that in people's writings, and I feel like I have to edit it in myself too sometimes when you're like, you start using phrases like, well, in my opinion, or I know that some people think this, and there's this other thing that maybe it makes it not true. And like, I mean, and I'm not talking about considering opposite points of view, but like when you start like hedging, you know what I mean? And it's like you're just getting scared to like say the thing, you know what I mean? Or like even with hungry authors, something that I think has helped me with this is proposal writing, because you have to just be really direct. But like with hungry authors, like if Ariel and I say like anybody can write a good or successful nonfiction book, like there's a million ways to be like, but like you do have to have some talent, and it helps if you do this, and there's this other thing, you know what I mean? Like with all these like caveats and sort of like parentheticals, and like there's a million like things you could say around that, but like what do you actually just mean and want to say, and let people feel how they feel about it? Well, there it is, you know what I mean? Like, but that's kind of scary
Yeah.
and hard, you know what I mean?
I think I see this sometimes with authors who want to be very inspirational, and like it comes from a good place where they're like, I want people to feel inspired and I want them to have a transformation. They start using these very big, vague words, and I'm like, but what transform? And you have to start asking a lot of questions around like, but what exactly does that look like? And sometimes, and I've had this happen before where someone who is, an incredible speaker, and you can kind of get away with doing that on the stage because so much of their stage presence is about your inflection and your tone and your body language. And, there are so many other nonverbals that you can use to communicate when you're speaking that give a sense of, transformation to your audience. But with when all of that is stripped away and all you have is black marks on a white page, you don't have all of that stuff to rely on, and you have to use the words to get the same effect. And I think a lot of people, especially people who are inspirational, motivational speakers, sometimes struggle with that of like, well, what am I really trying to say? Because that flowery language comes so naturally and easily when they're speaking to people, but trying to get it like out on the page is so hard.
Yeah. Actually, did y'all, okay, so have y'all seen any or heard anything about the like J-Lo documentary and movie?
I think you might have told me about
Yeah.
this a little bit.
Okay, so this is one of my favorite like analogies to use right now when talking to people about like being really clear, is that, okay, so J-Lo, I haven't actually seen it because I just don't care and it looks terrible. But anyway, she like made a movie, and then the movie accompanied this her newest album, and then she made a documentary about making the movie. So there's like three pieces of content that have come out, and apparently they're all terrible and just sort of funny. Not supposed to be funny, but you know. But it's a lot of J-Lo, like I've seen lots of clips of it on TikTok, people sort of snipping it and then talking about it. And there's one clip that's going around a lot where J-Lo's trying to be very inspirational. And I actually think she really thinks that she is. And she's talking about like before she got back with Ben, she's like, I just had to walk with my demons. I was walking with my demons. I had to tackle my demons. And she's kind of going on and on about these demons she had to wrestle with. And like everyone's like, but what, like what were they? Like, what does that mean? Were you like, were did it was like an addiction or some kind? And she's like, you just have to face them. And you're like, okay, but like what does that mean? But she like clearly really thinks she's just like going for it. But I like, and I've used that example a couple times lately because I'm like, it doesn't hit because nobody knows what that means. What are the demons? She didn't say she became an alcoholic. She didn't say, you know, whatever she was going, she didn't say she was going through a divorce. She just talked vaguely about demons. And that doesn't hit anybody hard because nobody knows, you know? Anyway,
I
poor
mean,
Fiona.
this
Yeah.
is the problem with purple prose, right? It's
Yeah.
just flowery or just, I don't even know. And we're kind of talking about purple prose. I don't know if you'd exactly put this in the same category, but just writing, writing that is unnecessarily vague and almost, and it's often very common with like inspirational, spiritual writing, but it
Yeah.
doesn't actually have any like tangible existence that you can point to.
Well, one of the things that stood out to me about that example is she's using a cliche. And anytime we're using a cliche, then, like, by definition, we're not saying what we actually mean. And so it's the same with like jargon, which is something, again, that Michael Harvey of the Nuts and Bolts book that I love talks about jargon, meaning like terminology that's specific to a certain industry or culture subgroup or something. Then it's like, okay, we kind of know what that means, but like, what do you actually mean? And so, like, that's the question we keep coming back to is like, well, what do you mean? What do you actually mean? And so, those cliches are always a red flag to look for.
Yeah, totally. Now, on that same note, when it comes to like memoir writing, when you work with clients who are writing memoir and you're sort of trying to edit them for this language or like push them in a direction, like I find just in my experience, a lot of memoir editing looks like say more here, or like, what do you mean here? Like, I had a client one time who part of his memoir was about coming out as gay. And he was always hedging a little bit in those parts of the story, you know, and he would just talk about like kind of vaguely about how it was hard, or say things like, I was confused, but he didn't really go into detail about any thoughts he was having, or like, was he dating women? Was he dating men? Like it, he just was really vague about it. And I like sort of tried to go there and sort of tried to go there, and eventually like me and the editor were both like, dude, not to be awkward, but like you gotta tell us what actually happened. You know what I mean? So like how do you handle that when you're editing somebody and you're trying to edit out that, like you said, jargony kind of unclear language, but it's quite personal what they probably need to say.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you're talking about the kind of situation where the person either doesn't want to give specific words because maybe they don't want you to read it, or they don't want the general public to read it, or they're afraid it's just going to be too much. Or, like, students in my recent cohort of Unearthing Beauty have talked a lot about, like, why would anyone want to read this? And it's been, was kind of an aside, but it's been cool to have. I love working in groups with writers because then I can have actual other like regular people say, no, I do. I want to read it. I want to know. But I mean, we talk about vulnerability in the class of like, how vulnerable should we be? And we shouldn't be like in a puddle on the bathroom floor, like just like pouring every gory detail out to a therapist that we've been seeing for 3 years. Like, that's, we don't want that. But we want to be pretty far. And I always tell them, like, just if you're in doubt, like, put it in. We can take it back out, or I can help you. If you really do go too far, like, I'll tell you. And that, again, like, if you don't have an editor or someone to work with, it makes it really tricky. Always recommend, of course, having some professional help whenever you can and whenever you can afford it and all of that. But I think most people tend to, with that type of writing, assume that their experience is too much or too whatever, too ick or embarrassing or, and that's just not, well, two things. One, it's more common than you think. That's what I always tell them. People have, everyone has been through something terrible. It's just that they don't talk about it. Which brings me to number two, which is that's what you're signing up for. If you're writing a memoir, is like,
Exactly. Yeah.
yeah, it's like, you gotta, like, that's why we read them. That's why they're so powerful, is that you are having that courage to share the things, to say the things that, maybe in different versions, but we've all gone through them or will. And so, well, I was also thinking about what you were saying of this sort of just like vague, like platitudes or euphemisms or all that stuff. And one of my favorite pieces of writing advice is that the more specific you are, the more universal it becomes. And so we think that, because we could maybe convince ourselves, like, oh, well, I also just don't really want to like get into the details because I want it to speak to people who have had different experiences. But what you end up doing there is making it speak to no one. Whereas if you were actually specific, like what color shirt, or like, like even details that would seem irrelevant, you don't want to go on and on, but like that specificity of like, what were you drinking? Not just I drank something, is going to bring it to life and allow it to resonate in a much deeper way with your reader.
Yeah, or even like my client, a lot of times he would say, I was just hiding. I was hiding. And I was like, but what does that even mean?
What did it look like?
Right. I mean, I'm assuming you weren't like literally hiding. So like describe when I just say I was hiding, it doesn't hit nearly as hard or isn't nearly as resonant if I say, whatever, like had never had a romantic relationship in my entire life or didn't was secretly going out at night without telling anyone in my real life. Or you know what I mean? Even if you haven't had that experience, haven't everyone done something that they didn't tell anyone about? Hasn't everyone had some sort of experience that they wanted to hide from people because they were embarrassed or whatever? You know, like that's, yeah, that specificity is so much just more resonant and memorable than yeah, like you said, platitudes or broad statements that don't really mean anything to anybody.
Well, again, like hiding could mean different things to different people or in different scenarios. So it's not clear either. And that going back to that question of like, how could this be understood in different ways? If the answer is yes, then it's time to probably think about, well, how could I make it less potentially confusing? And so it's like, I scrupulously avoided conversations with all men. Like, that's really specific, and you don't need to tell us anymore that you're hiding because we can now see it.
Yeah, and like you said, you signed up to write a memoir, buddy. Better. Everyone's nosy, don't be afraid to tell your business. Just tell everybody. They'll probably want to know about it.
And obviously, that has to be balanced with like, is it actually helpful to the story? But you're right. I mean, if you're signing up to write a memoir and a key point is when you came out, then yeah, you're not going to be able to hedge around that. Like, you got to just come out and say it.
Right, and that goes back to that idea of like, when do you zoom in and when do you zoom out? Like, if this is a critical, like, turning point moment, then we need to get that detail. There might be other places where you can just say something more broad and summarize. But if you know what the main point is, then that'll help you decide whether this is a pivotal moment or just a, we need a little context.
So tell us more about what's some of the best writing advice that you've gotten in your career?
Well, one of them I just mentioned about that specificity. I feel like most things I've kind of just picked up, not to say that people didn't help me learn them, but I don't have like pithy phrases that, make some great quotes. Well, I guess another one related to craft, like we've already touched on, but just that idea of like you have to get something on the page. So it's like we talk about like do the book mapping and make your outline and think about all the steps, and that's really important. But then at some point on day three, whatever that is, like you just gotta write something. And your process might be that you've got to just write stuff on day one and then you can make an outline. But that courage again to just like put something down and let it be awful, or some people don't like to call it awful, but like not finished. For me, it's helpful to just think, well, this is just supposed to be terrible. So if it ends up terrible, then that's okay. And if it ends up not terrible, then I'm pretty awesome. It helps my like mindset. And then you're gonna edit, because once you've got something there, you can manipulate it. And it's like so much easier to me, at least, and to many writers. And I've seen that with my students this year, that I guess they've been used to writing things where, they're strong writers, they're smart kids. They've been used to just thinking about it for a while and then just writing their draft and turning it in. And that is not working with more complex arguments and longer papers. And so they've really had to learn to just like get something down, and then, well, in their case, and then I can help them, or they can start to help themselves. One other piece of advice that's so more about the like, not the craft of writing necessarily, but more of the lifestyle sort of, is like be generous. And that's something that I got that message like really early in my return to like trying to be a writer, which was like only about 5 years ago. And what, part of what that means is being generous with everyone else. Like look for opportunities to give stuff away. Like use your gifts to serve others and trust that it will come back to you probably tenfold eventually. And I found that really encouraging, because I had had a scarcity mindset before. I mean, I still struggle with that Enneagram 4, but it was like, well, I don't want to, let the cat out of the bag or whatever it is. It's like, this, like I have to protect this limited resource that I have, instead of feeling like, no, like a rising tide lifts all ships. And that it also helped me to be looking to form relationships in an authentic way, I think that has really been powerful. And then also like be generous with yourself. I think of creativity requires a sense of abundance. So if we're like really harsh and sort of miserly with ourselves, whether that's with, our time or our like environment or whatever that looks like, it's gonna sort of squash your creativity. So try to like look for the good, celebrate small wins, and trust that the well of creativity is endless and you are enough. And then, of course, these are things I have to tell myself pretty much daily, but I think that generosity mindset is a really powerful one.
Well, Mara, how can people connect with you? Because you are an incredibly generous writer and writing coach and teacher and editor as well. So if someone wants to work with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, you can find me at my website, which is maraeller.com. And I have a free download, 10 Tips to Write Like a Pro, that you can grab there. And you can also sign up for my newsletter, which is called One True Sentence. That's at the bottom of that page. And I'm on Instagram, Mara.Eller. I mean, I'm brand new on Substack, so there'll be some stuff there. And if you want to learn more about either of the classes that I'm offering, I guess I haven't fully explained those yet, but there's the Unearthing Beauty that we mentioned, transformational personal writing, class. They're finishing up the fourth cohort right now, so you could get on the wait list to be the first to hear about the next one. And then I'm also working on a course all about the craft of writing. I'm calling it The Soul and Science of Great Writing. And so you can find more about that and get on the wait list and get early bird offers when those are ready at maraeller.com/soul and science.
I love that title. That's a good one.
Wow, that's great. Thank you.
Perfect. All right. Awesome. Well, we'll include those links in the show notes. But thank you again, Mara. This has been awesome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan, not only because you're friends, but you guys are two of the pros that I would definitely point people to as not only experts, but just great people that they can trust. So keep
Thank
doing what you
you.
do.
You too. You too. Thanks. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you're a hungry author and you want to learn more about our community and courses, head over to hungryauthors.com. Remember, you have a story and a message worth sharing, and if you've got the hunger, you can make it happen.